Hello, welcome to the latest Pinken.com Norwich City podcast. I'm David Freezer and I'm sat here alongside our chief Canaries correspondent, Paddy Davitt. We are on our way home from Sunderland. Our location this time is the Peterborough Services, as wonderful as ever. We just stopped for a bit of lunch on our way back to Norwich, but we thought we'd have a quick catch up with you guys to talk about the night before and a 1-1 draw at Sunderland that, it's fair to say, was quite chaotic, really, wasn't it, Pad?
It's a very good word, Dave, chaotic. To bore people for a little bit, but to underline it, I have about 650 word hole for a match report in the newspapers, and I think I'd filled that by the half-time whistle. So it was just, yeah, to underline the scale of... And at that point, it was 0-0. If my memory serves me, I was still a bit scrambled.
Was, yeah.
So for a 0-0, you basically almost filled what needed to be filled in print, because it was just one thing after another, and that continued in the same vein in the second half, and ultimately when the dust settled, it was a salvage operation when it should have been a very comfortable away win. So I think ultimately we'll probably be talking again on this pod, as we have done ad nauseum, about Norwich's inability to marry the possession and the passing with the punch at the top end of the pitch, because again, if we were in any doubt, what we saw on Tuesday night at Sunderland is more evidence that they need to go and get some goals in the window in the summer.
Yeah, 25 shots for Sunderland, 18 for Norwich, so 43 in total, just to show you how many there was. It was a ridiculous game, really, in that Sunderland needed to get a win, but Norwich had denied them that in the 89th minute in the end, thanks to Ivo Pinto popping up and showing the strikers how it's done, really, with a nice finish at the back post to salvage a point for Norwich. But they're left 7 points adrift, and with games against Fulham and Wolves to come, it looks like they will be in League One next season. As far as Norwich go, they drop a place to 13th. Ipswich go back above them. They beat Barnsley 1-0 at home, and we'll come back to that later, as I'm sure most of you will have seen by now. Mr McCarthy has made a quick exit stage left. But as far as the game goes last night, the penalty was missed 5 minutes before half-time. Aidan McGeady for Sunderland. It was Wes Houlihan that gave that away, wasn't it, on his 350th appearance. So that's not a nice one to remember. Sorry, he lost possession ahead of it, and then Grant Hanley brought down Ashley Fletcher, was it, for the penalty. So that was the big opportunity missed, but Nelson Oliveira had hit the post, he'd missed a big chance. Josh Murphy had found the side netting. Angus Gunn had been tested a couple of times. That's all in the first half, isn't it? Then you go on from there, and Norwich missed a host more. James Maddison misses two good ones. Nelson Oliveira misses another one. James Maddison hits the post after being set up by Oliveira. This is all the ones just coming off the top of my head, because there were so many.
Josh Murphy at 1-1.
Yes, that was where it finished. After Pinto had equalised, Lee Camp, former Norwich, of course, really good save. And in the end, it felt like a bit of a positive, but because it was such a ridiculous game, I think everyone's heads were kind of spinning. Even Daniel Farker said it was a crazy game, didn't he?
He called it a wild night, I think. And he said he was stood there in his technical area as the second half elapsed, and just could not believe how many, as he called them, 100% chances, yeah. Which basically what you referenced there, pretty much in chronological order. And okay, put into one side, it was a team who were basically fighting probably a losing battle for survival now, but any team in the Championship, as tough a league as it is, you go away from home and create 8 or 9 100% chances, to be basically needing a salvage operation a minute from normal time from your fullback, it does bring into sharp focus that where the issues are and where they will continue to be. But overall, yeah, setting that aside, because we all know that is the issue, and those who matter, i.e. Farker and Webber, know that's the issue and will hope to address it in the summer. Overall, I thought it was another positive, not just the character they showed having fallen 1-0 behind. But I just thought, again, in this quest for a little bit more going forward, that there were so many opportunities, there was so much good play, and it is just that final end product, which is obviously the most important thing, because that's the difference between where they are now, which is sort of mid-table, and really being in the mix, and you know, talking, still having something materially to play going into these final four games. But overall, like, yeah, I thought it was a good performance in the sense of what we saw from Norwich as a unit and individuals within that unit, but just that maddening frustration again that it's not the full package, and it never has really been the full package this season from minute one, has it?
Yeah, I mean, it quite easily could have been another 3-1 to build on the 3-1 against Villa on Saturday, couldn't it? And then, of course, we'd be travelling home in even better spirits. But I think the talking point really of the night was when the team news dropped, wasn't it? Four changes. Daniel switched back to the team that played at QPR and, of course, lost 4-1. So James Husband came back in at left back. Tim Closer dropped to the bench, and Christoph Zimmermann started alongside Grant Hanley in a back four. Alex Tessie was rested on the bench, so Wes Houlihan came in to attack in midfield, and Nelson Oliveira comes in for Dennis Trebeni. Now, this is the final midweek game of the season. They've now got four Saturday matches left this season. I think a lot of people were a little bit disappointed that Daniel maybe, I suppose they see it as wasn't brave enough to go with his first choice team, because that's almost like a second choice team in some regards that he played last night. But he's the guy that sees them in training. He justified it afterwards in that basically it all came down to fitness, didn't it?
Yes, yeah. And that's what he projects publicly. Now, privately, it might also be to those 11, because it was the same 11 who, let's be honest, capitulated at QPR. It's we're trying to do something here. We're trying to build something for next season and beyond. You lads haven't really grasped the opportunity at QPR. Here's another one. Can you do it? So, because materially, again, keep referring to the league, yes, while they want positive results and they want to score goals and win games, it isn't. If we're talking the difference between finishing 11th, 12th, 13th, then in that sense, that's not the priority right here, right now. The priority is finding players who he can trust next season to really hang his hat on. And hence why, because you look at it, and as you say, in terms of the fatigue factor, well, you've got four games left and then you've got a summer break, so why are you resting players? That shouldn't be his primary motive. It should really be almost saying to the 11 on duty at Villa, you performed, go again, lads, within the confines of any who had one or two niggles. But I just got the sense that maybe privately it was almost a message he's sending to Weber as well by playing those lads. Maybe that if he isn't quite convinced by them, maybe it's just another message to the power brokers above him that, you know, there's a lot of lads who will be good enough at the Championship level next season, and maybe one or two in that squad who aren't good enough, and maybe it's just another nudge to people who ultimately control the purse strings and control the transfer strategy that you need to help me here. You can quite see with your own eyes that there's one or two in that group who aren't going to be good enough, and we need to address it, and it's not just the top end of the pitch.
Yeah, I mean, James Husband is probably one that would fall into that category, brought back in but taken off at half time alongside Wes Houlihan. Daniel switched to a three at the back, brought Tim Closer on and Jamal Lewis on at left wing back. I mean, I'm sure James will say that he has not hit the levels that he would have hoped to this season. And Daniel taking him off at half time. I actually saw James after full time by the dugouts as we were waiting for the interviews, and he had a face like thunder. So I don't think he was particularly pleased with his night's work. Do you see him as being part of this squad next season, or if there's an option for him to leave, somebody is interested, he's one that maybe could move on?
If you're asking me, is he going to oust Jamal Lewis? No. So in that regard, as always with these things, there's moving parts, and it's the player and the club. It's not solely what Daniel Farke and Stuart Webber want. James Husband would have come here hoping to be the first choice left back, left wing back, having had an injury interrupted spell to his career at Middlesbrough. He'd never really established himself at Middlesbrough. He would have felt stepping down as it was, because Middlesbrough were in the Premier League at that point, he could really kickstart his career. That hasn't happened. You would understand his frustration that he's basically been bypassed by a lad who nobody had really heard of at the start of the season. As long as Jamal Lewis is here, Jamal Lewis is going to be the first choice in that position, as far as I can see. So, yeah, if the summer comes and both for both parties it's right, and that's not just him, you could put Jarvis in that category, Naismith and Martin, maybe even Oliveira. There's a lot of lads in who would be in that category, and it. If it's right for both parties, then yes, I could see there being movement in quite a lot of, if you want to label them maybe unfairly, the fringe element, the shadow men in that squad. Because, ultimately, Farker and Webber have said this, more so at the start of the season, you can't have what they had when they inherited it, which was a bloated squad, lads who were nowhere near the first team, knew they wasn't going to be involved, and that's not good for in terms of a a small committed group all pushing in the same direction, all going for the same goal, all feeling they've got an opportunity to play every week or every midweek. So yeah, I think it's clear now that there are lads in that squad who will be frontline options, and there's ones who aren't. And the ones who aren't, if they can be moved on and better options brought in, I would think Farquharson would want to go down that route.
When you even see James Maddison missing the chances that he did last night, certainly later in the game, he had some big opportunities and he really struck them wildly, didn't he? That sort of, you know what sort of night it is. Dennis Rebeni did come on in the latter stages alongside Nelson Oliveira. They took off, who did they take off to bring Rebeni on? They took off Zimmerman, didn't they? And went back to a four at the back. And we haven't seen them play together much at all. So. No. What did you think? I mean, Rebeni was probably disappointed to not start. Daniel said that he'd had a bit of cramp after the Villa game, of course, when he scored his first goal, didn't he? I thought he added a bit of sort of directness and urgency to the play and caused a few problems, but it was maybe a bit clumsy about how he went about it. But Daniel did go for it. He did try to win this, didn't he? And they very much could have, particularly with that Josh Murphy one.
Yeah, no two ways about it. I mean, at 1-1, 89th minute, there was no sense of, okay lads, we've got out of jail here, let's play it out. It was still to the sound of the trumpets, and that was an I would the Murphy camp duel, I would more tilt that towards that was an excellent save. You know, he got his leg out, angled strike, it was going in, and I don't think Josh did too much wrong there. Maddison had another chance after that where, yeah, indicative of his night and a rare night for him in terms of his way, you know, his waywardness and his lack of precision in terms of the key moments, because he's the only one, you would say, over the course of the season who has, in those scoring positions, really shown a clinical intent and an ability to execute. You know, Bristol City, Brentford, Middlesbrough, you could go on and on through his 15 goals, is it, I'm counting, but just last night it just didn't work for him, and no more so than when obviously the chance you referenced that, I think it was one, was it 0-0 at that stage when Oliveira had basically committed the keeper, slid it across, and he just couldn't get there quick enough. I think there's a debate whether Oliveira needed to play the ball as harshly as he did, because by the time Maddison caught up with it, he was outside the far post and he just couldn't guide it back inside. But that was kind of symptomatic of a James Maddison's night in front of goal. But as I say, you know, you forgive him that, because he's been the standout performer in the final third for Norwich this season. And as I say, you know, again, even since the final whistle, with this more speculation about his future, I think it's going to continue now, and it's going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. And you know, I think ultimately all points to maybe James moving on in the summer and Norwich moving in a different direction. You just hope again that if he does move on, it's Norwich banking a hell of a lot of money for him, and it's a good opportunity for the lad as well, and then Norwich look to reinvest portions of that fee, because they're obviously, the majority of that I think would go to plugging certain holes on the balance sheet, you know, the end of the parachute money. It's all been well documented, but Farker and Webber will know that. And as I say, Farker himself said Monday, I think it was, prior to the game, it's not going to be the upheaval that they inherited last summer with 40 odd players moving on, coming in. It's going to be far more targeted, I think, in terms of what they're trying to do, but no less pivotal to having a real good crack next season, because I think it's safe to say if we're talking about Norwich mid-table this time next season, that won't be good enough.
Yeah, Josh Murphy linked with Crystal Palace and Leicester in the Mirror as well this morning, so his agent's getting to work now that Josh is on 10 goals, and of course scored that spectacular one against Villa at the weekend. I don't think we mentioned the Sunderland goal, so just to cover that, it was 63rd minute, Aidan McGeady, who was a bit of a nuisance all night, although his final ball let him down quite a few times, struck the left post, the ball bounced to the right and Lyndon Gooch followed up to put it into an empty net with Angus Gunn beaten. To be fair, they already missed a penalty, and that's the woodwork hit twice from both teams. So I think we can put that game to bed from here. On our way up, I mean, as you can imagine, we've had lengthy journeys in both directions up to Sunderland, and it was a very foggy night as well. And there was a point where it was really rolling in, and we were starting to worry as to whether the game would be at risk. But the far side, as where we were at the back of the stand in the press box, was a bit difficult to see. But I think at pitch level, it wasn't too bad. But I actually said to you on the way up, didn't I, Pad, that I'd had more faith that Norwich would win against Cardiff at home on Saturday than win this tricky banana skin type game at Sunderland last night. And if they can now do that, I mean, everyone's relishing the thought of really derailing Neil Warnock after the... Well, he's annoyed Norwich fans many times over the years, but he of course had a real pop at Wolves on Friday night after they lost that, and they have actually fallen to third now. Fulham have got up to second, haven't they? So that's a tough game. We'll see Alex Tetti come back, no doubt. You'd have thought Dennis Shabeni. Moritz Leighton is getting closer to fitness. Whether Tom Tribal or Hernandez will be anywhere close, it seems a little bit unlikely at this point. But do you feel reasonably confident that Norwich can cause an upset Saturday?
Oh yeah, 100%. Yeah. You know, this is it. This is a topic we covered with Daniel, that the teams at the top end of the pitch, okay, Fulham were a little bit too polished for them on Good Friday, but Villa, Borough, Derby, Wolves, they're not the games that I particularly worry about when Norwich are playing those teams, because they get a little bit more time to play. It's not the 10 across the back line, parking the bus type of games. I wouldn't put Sunderland quite in that category, but in terms of a team who are down there scrapping for their lives, Norwich just haven't consistently found the right formula to break those type of teams down. So conversely, Cardiff will come to Carrow Road Saturday. A draw's no good to them now. As you said, they've fallen out of automatic. They're in a neck and neck rest with Fulham. They will need to win the game. Warnock will come with that mindset, so will his players, which I think suits Norwich. And I think that could be a right good rip-roaring game, because as you rightly say, he certainly defies opinion. I think it's diplomatically accurate to say. And there'll be no sitting on the fence with the Norwich fans. I think they would love to, as you say, give him a bloody nose, metaphorically speaking. One or two connections. Obviously, Wiltshire, I think, will be ineligible, but certainly Anthony Pilkington should be in the Cardiff ranks. And the game down there, my mind goes back to just before Christmas. Again, it was Norwich in possession, far more polished, far more pleasing on the eye, but the punch came from Cardiff. And if it's that type of game again, then, you know, let's hope we're not talking about, well, Norwich haven't taken their chances and Cardiff did, because, you know, as I say, that's becoming a bit of a tired theme with Norwich. It's it'll be interesting what he goes with at the top end of the pitch, whether Shrebeni will be back in or whether he goes with Oliveira. In terms of looking forward to that, yeah, I don't think Norwich should go into that game with any fear whatsoever, because they've proven time and time again that the better teams in the division, they're more than a match.
There's not been many games this season where Norwich have been totally flat and not had a load of chances, is there? It's just taking them that's it's the big issue. And one man who won't be taking any of those chances at the end of this year is Marcus Edwards. Daniel and the club revealed after the game last night that he's gone back to Spurs. His loan deal is over due to personal reasons. I mean, we've talked about Marcus Edwards at length since January, when it all amounted to one brief substitute appearance against Fulham. But it's a shame it's not worked out. But I think you could sort of read it into Daniel's body language that basically this has come to an end early because it wasn't working out.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of hype, but in the end, not a lot of end product, really. Personal reasons sort of conveys the impression that there's some issues, maybe, I don't know, in his background, his personal life. I don't think it's that. I think it is simply a case of it's a footballing decision. It's been mutually agreed with Tottenham, Norwich and the boy himself. And as you rightly say, you know, with four games to go, he's had, I think, 7-minute cameo off the bench against Fulham on Good Friday. He's not going to be featuring down the stretch. That's a loan spell that was a gamble in terms of if it came off, fine, he could influence games. If it didn't, which is how it's played out, then he goes back to Tottenham and he hasn't really accelerated his career, which is a shame for the lad. But I don't think Norwich are going to miss out too much. That's the gamble you take with young players on loan. Angus Gunn, absolutely unqualified success. Harrison Reed as well has really finished the season strongly. Marcus Edwards, unfortunately, in a different category. But I think, as I wrote today, you know, Harry Kane came from Tottenham and it didn't exactly work out for him at Norwich, and he's not done too bad for himself. So we'll see whether Marcus goes back and maybe that reality check helps him kick on in his career. Just it won't be probably to the benefit of Norwich.
Yeah, he just reminded me of a tweet I saw. I can't remember who it was, I'm afraid, but somebody saying, knowing our record with Tottenham loanees, Marcus Edwards will probably win the Ballon d'Or next year. So we'll see whether he can follow Harry Kane's sort of rise in the game. Another thing which broke after the game was involving Ipswich, and I think think it's fair to say Mick McCarthy has gone rather viral in football today, hasn't he? We've just been listening to the radio on the way down, and it's got a fair bit of coverage. And our colleague Stuart Watson from the East Anglian Daily Times and Ipswich Star had a bit of a shock after the game, didn't he?
Yeah, I'm not sure. Yeah, that's what you need when you're on deadline for print and you sort of... which, don't forget, they did beat Barnsley, so that's a positive news story. And literally 2-3 minutes into his post-match presser, announces, "That's it, I'm off, lads. Thanks for everything. Goodbye." And walked out in a bit of a huff, by all accounts. So it sounds like he was probably waiting for that one. I've seen a little bit of chatter that it was contractual, as soon as they mathematically couldn't get into the playoffs, that he was free to go. I don't know if that's the case, but I think it's quite clear that that's ended fairly sourly between Mick and certain sections of the Ipswich fan base, and I don't think there'll be any tears shed on either side. So, but purely in domestic squabble side of the fence, as you rightly said at the start of the pod, you know, they have now gone above it, Norwich on goal difference. 4 games left. It'd be nice for Norwich to just take advantage of any kind of inevitable uncertainty. I think Klug, the academy head, has gone in there now on a caretaker basis, so it'll be interesting to see how their players respond now, because clearly there's a lot more uncertainty around Ipswich than there is Norwich at this moment in time. And it just would be nice in what's been a bit of a difficult season for Norwich fans, to put it mildly, for just to finish the season slightly above their near neighbours, albeit not in the grand scheme of things, probably doesn't make too much difference either way. But as we were discussing on the way now, it's kind of McCarthy is the long live the king is dead. It's now an interesting, from afar looking at it, which way Ipswich will go, whether they'll go, you know, Cowley with his Braintree connections, and he's obviously making some headlines down at Lincoln. Whether they go that kind of almost a Daniel Farke, a little bit unproven, although you'd probably say Cowley's less unproven an option than Farke was when he arrived at Norwich from Borussia Dortmund 2, or whether they go more, I've seen McLaren linked, I've seen Tony Mowbray doing a good job, ex-Ipswich doing a good job at Blackburn. You know, which fork in the road Evans decides to go down there, because you know, it could go one or two ways. And obviously from Norwich's point of view, it'd be nice to see him go more down the League One route.
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to check the stats before we hit record on this, but I think that means Mick McCarthy leaves without ever having got one over Norwich, isn't he? Yes, is that 10 games?
Eight. Four draws, four defeats.
Right, okay. Yeah. So, you know, from a Norwich point of view, there's been a great deal of humour enjoyed about it. You know, agent Mick McCarthy, you are relieved of duty, etc. But it'll be interesting to see whether Ipswich can react from this, because I think most Norwich fans appreciate he's actually done a pretty decent job on limited budget over the years. So I'm sure another club will snap him up, because he's good at what he does, to be perfectly honest. But I'd have thought he'll want a little bit more of a transfer budget to play with wherever he turns up next. So yeah, we'll have to keep an eye on what happens with Ipswich as well. And I think that just about sums up a busy night of midweek action, really. So we'll leave it there, and we'll enjoy a sandwich before heading back to Arch and Towers. Press conference ahead of the Cardiff game will be on Friday. Mr. Davitt will bring you all the latest that Daniel Farke has got to say ahead of the game. And then Mr. Bailey will return from his paternity leave to join us at Carrow Road on Saturday. And the three of us will bring the tea news to you as usual from about 2 o'clock. And we'll see what happens there. And then of course, it's what, Preston away, Leeds home, and Sheffield Wednesday away to finish the season. So not quite done, but we'll see what happens before we head into the summer. Right, thanks very much, Pad. We'll catch up with all you guys soon. Cheers.